Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 29th day of July 2019. It's a rat-infested Monday, a crime-infested Monday. This show will be infested with the word infested. I am Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks to all of you who have taken the time to write a review up there on iTunes. It's like at 210, and I appreciate it. I read every single one of them. They infest my mind. Although is that racist? Anyway, you can email me at Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's just that simple, just that easy. I hope you had a great weekend, because we're in for another hell of a week. I can already tell. It's off to a banging start Monday morning, and the stupid is already turned up to 11. You can enter to, by the way, you can enter to win a signed copy of Justice on Trial by Carrie Severino and Molly Hemingway by emailing me and letting me know you want to be entered into that. And if you purchased the book already and you have some kind of digital receipt or just a regular old receipt, or maybe even just a picture of you holding the book, not standing in a Barnes & Noble, no cheaters, include that and you'll be entered twice. Two times. That's, people always say, well, what can I do to increase my odds? That way. That's how you can do it. That's the only way you can do it, unless you wire me a lot of money, which, in which case, you can probably just buy a signed book for cheaper than I'd be willing to sell my soul for. But it is available for a long-term lease, so interested parties can email me their offers. I don't even know where to begin. This is such a stupid, ridiculous story, yet it is consuming the news cycle. It is consuming all news. It's nice to know there's nothing going on in the world except for Donald Trump's tweets. So Saturday morning comes around. Everybody, I hope, had a good Friday. You can't really have a bad Friday. And I wake up Saturday morning. I didn't turn on the news until later, sort of by accident. The TV was on news, turned on the TV to change the channel, and I saw that there was all this whining going on about how Donald Trump is a horrible racist because of something he tweeted to a person of color. Oh, no. I thought at first, somehow, is the news a rerun on Saturday? What's going on? Because this is the same old song and dance. It strikes me as though the Democrats' 2020 strategy to win everywhere in this country is to just go around and say, you're a racist, now vote for me. Or you're a racist, and the only way you can not be a racist is to vote for me. This is how insane these people have gotten. Started with Trump tweets on July 27th, a Saturday for those of you playing the home game, at 7:14 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It was a day like any other until Donald Trump opened his Twitter app. He tweeted, quote, Representative Elijah Cummings has been a brutal bully shouting and screaming at the great men and women of Border Patrol about conditions at the southern border, when actually his Baltimore district is far worse and more dangerous. His district is considered the worst in the USA. As proven last week during a congressional tour, the border is clean, efficient, and well-run, just very crowded. Cummings' district is a disgusting, rat-infested, rat and rodent-infested mess. If he spent more time in Baltimore, maybe he could help clean up this very dangerous and filthy place. End quote. It was over two tweets. Well, everybody in the media, everybody with a press credential, immediately declared this to be a racist statement. Now, what in there was determined to be racist? Well, nothing in particular. It just was determined to be racist because he said it about a black member of Congress. Now, to show you how stupid this is, and actually how racist this is, because that's really what's at play here with the Democrats and their allies in the media. They are working under the philosophy that you can't say certain things to people who are of a different race. Now, only if you're a Republican, and I'll explain that and have the audio proof for you in a second. But that's it. You can be as critical as you want if you're white to anybody who's white. Go ahead, knock yourself out. John McCain is still a hero on the left. But if you dare say anything about a person of color and you're a Republican, you're not allowed to do that. Essentially, they're saying you have to talk to minorities differently than you would talk to white people. I am no wordsmith. I certainly have not written a dictionary. But to my mind, that's racist. Treating people differently based on the color of their skin strikes me as, the very freaking definition of the word racist. But no, it's horribly progressive. It's very important and crucial that we do this in these sensitive times, at this tumultuous time. In Donald Trump's America, we have to be overly sensitive to people of color. Why? You don't think they can handle it? It's always, you ever notice how it's 99% it's white liberals telling you this stuff? White liberals being very upset. Joe Scarborough types out there going, this is an outrage. Did you see what the president said to a person of color? Yeah, Joe, I did. It's no big deal. Let me preface this and everything I'm going to say after this with a very simple declaration of truth. I graduated college in December of 2000. I was looking for work. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. I just knew that there wasn't going to be anything I could do in Detroit where I was living. I had come out a few times to my best friend's apartment in Baltimore. He lived right in the heart of Baltimore, not downtown, north of downtown, between downtown and Johns Hopkins, a section of the town called Mount Vernon. I had really enjoyed my time in Baltimore because I'd come out for a weekend here, a weekend there, or a week here. I'd come out for spring break because I couldn't afford to go anyplace else. And I would end up in a situation where on spring breaks, I would come out and do some temp work, especially at the end of my college career in Washington, D.C. So I'd take the train or drive down to Washington, D.C., to work, to try and get a foot in the door. I couldn't do an internship because I needed to work. I was poor and broke and, you know, working for free and staying some, anything that was going to cost me money was going to be impossible for me to do. So this was the closest I could get to an internship. I got a few job interviews. I'd come out a few more times and done some more temping. I'd gotten a job at the Heritage Foundation. Not making a ton of money, making $26,000 a year, which was still way more than I'd ever even imagined making, to be perfectly honest with you, before I graduated college. My bar was set pretty damn low. So I looked into places to live in Washington, D.C., and I couldn't afford it. I didn't want to live with roommates. I had stuff that I liked. I liked living alone. I didn't want to live with people I didn't know, and I didn't know anybody in Washington, D.C., and I had cats, so I didn't want, you know, I wasn't going to trust somebody with my stuff and my cats. But living alone in Washington, D.C. was not an option. It was not fiscally possible. Forget responsible. It was not fiscally possible. It would have cost pretty much everything I was making to live in Washington, D.C., unless I wanted to live in a closet somewhere. So what I did was looked into Baltimore. I was familiar with Baltimore. It was pretty easy to look into Baltimore. The train ran every hour, every half hour during rush hour. So I thought, well, this is incredibly doable. The Heritage Foundation is right near the train station in D.C. So I got an apartment in a basement of a row house in Baltimore near the train station. It was $425 a month. I thought that was two rooms and a kitchen and a bathroom. But the kitchen was a galley kitchen, very small, and the bathroom is a bathroom, and those don't really count. So I thought, this is great. This is great. I can stay in Baltimore and work in D.C. I was able to do it. Well, that place in Baltimore happened to be in Elijah Cummings' district. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't care at the time. It was what I could afford, And I knew some people in Baltimore. They didn't live in my neighborhood, but I knew some people in Baltimore. So it was nice, if you're going to move 500 miles away from the only place you've ever lived, to move somewhere where you kind of know somebody. My best friend, there was like a week overlap. He went back to Detroit to go to medical school. And so he was gone right away. We never really lived in the same city at the same time, although I did. Or no, it was a month overlap because I slept on his futon. That's what I did. I forgot about that. God, that futon. I actually have the futon, the mattress anyway. I slept on his futon, went to work, and then used that month to find a place to live. So I did. So I lived from 2001 to June of 2001 until 2014, sometime, I can't remember, November, I think, of 2014 in Elijah Cummings District. I did so without a car. I didn't own a car until 2013. Well, yeah, because my car's a 2013. So I was walking everywhere. I was taking public transportation. I was taking cabs. This was before Uber. I know a lot of Elijah Cummings District pretty well. And before 2010, it was mostly contained by the city. And when I say before 2013, when they redistricted after the 2010 census, the Democrats and Martin O'Malley, the Democratic governor, former mayor of Baltimore, admitted as much under oath in a lawsuit. They redrew the districts in Maryland to advantage the Democrats as much as humanly possible. You don't think of it now, but Maryland is a very blue state, don't get me wrong. But at one point, there were three members of the House delegation that were Republicans up until the redistricting that took effect in 2013. Then the Democrats had effectively eliminated two of those. There are too many Republicans in this state to completely draw the lines in a way that eliminated all of them. So there is one Republican representative, Andy Harris, who represents the eastern shore of the state. And the rest have, all the Republicans that were in districts that would elect Republican members of Congress have been absorbed into heavily Democratic districts. Elijah Cummings District, which was largely West Baltimore and a little bit of Baltimore County, now is very weirdly shaped. There's a long sort of land bridge. It's a ridiculous shape. Google it. You'll see it. Just take my word for it. It looks like an evil Rorschach test that somebody sneezed on while it was wet. So while Elijah Cummings represents West Baltimore, his district now encompasses parts of Columbia and parts of Baltimore County, which is north of the city, that's very rural. It's a large geographic area, but it's very rural. Oddly conservative, but they had to get rid of those people. They had to blunt those people, the Democrats did, and absorb them into other Democratic districts so they could eliminate Republican seats. Something Maryland has never mentioned in the whiny Democrats going, oh, gerrymandering's evil and awful. It's weird, isn't it? So Elijah Cummings' district is bigger than just Baltimore. But when you talk about Elijah Cummings and his district, you think Baltimore. Why? Because he's been in there since 1996, I think it was. He won a special election to replace Kwesi Mfume. And so in that, 15 years or ish, whatever, until the redistricting took effect, his district was largely West Baltimore and a little bit of the western suburbs. So when you talk about Elijah Cummings' district, nobody's thinking of Columbia, Maryland, which is about a 40-minute drive from Baltimore City because of the screwed up way that they drew this map. You're not thinking of the rural areas in Baltimore County north of the city that will take you another 40 minutes to get to. You're thinking about the district Elijah Cummings not only represented for 20 years in Congress, but 10 years previous to that in the Maryland State House. So Elijah has been representing this area for 30 plus years. what the president said about it being rat and rodent infested is absolutely 100% true. I can say this because, well, I lived there. If you Google Baltimore rat bumper sticker, you will see a bumper sticker of a silhouette of a rat that says Balt on it for Baltimore. And underneath it, it says Charm City, USA. It is a wildly popular bumper sticker throughout the area. It really, honest and truly is, because Baltimore is a rat and rodent infested hellhole. When I would take my trash out, my trash day was on Fridays. You wanted to get out there. It was Friday night. They'd pick up the trash Friday night. I'd never seen that before, or they're picking up the trash at night, but they're picking up the trash at night. You can't bring your garbage out before 5 o'clock or you'll get a ticket. And I actually got a ticket once. They'll write you up and they find you. I don't know. They dig through your garbage and they found something, a bill or something with my address and my apartment number. And boom, I get this thing and it says, you threw out your trash early. Here's a fine. The reason that they fine people is because if you put your trash out too early, the rats will get it, right? Even an hour. They're very anal and they use it to rip people off. So when you take the trash out there at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock on a Friday night, sun's going down for most of the year, East Coast, even Eastern Standard Time, we're on the eastern side of Eastern Standard Time. Like, for example, it's lighter an hour later in Michigan. Usually you check the sunset times. You take the trash out there, there's a good pile of trash in the alleys behind these buildings, these row houses. You never just walked up to the pile of trash and tossed your bag on top of it. Why? Well, you probably did that when you first moved to the area or your first time taking out the trash. But sooner or later, you notice that something moves when you set the bag down. Now, what moves? Homeless guy living in there? That's a possibility. But more often than not, it's cat-sized sewer rats. Not a big cat, not a jungle cat, but certainly a one-year-old cat-sized rats. They don't like having stuff set on them, it turns out. And they'd scurry. They're not trying to attack you or anything. They just want to get the hell away from you. You've disturbed them from eating whatever disgusting thing they're eating. I don't blame them for trying to eat. They're living creatures and they have instincts. But you learned that you don't set your trash up there. You don't walk up to the pile of trash on the sidewalk adjacent to the garage, the wall that you pile your trash on. You get within a few feet, 5, depending on how heavy your bag was, and you just tossed it. And you hope for the best. You just didn't care. You didn't want to go near that pile of trash, especially the later it was. You know, the giant sewer rats come out at night. So Baltimore is, in fact, rat infested. The city is always complaining about how they don't have enough money to do this, that, and the other thing. And one of the things they always say they don't have enough money to is to deal with rats. So what they say is don't put out your trash until the trash is coming to be collected. That doesn't stop the jerk from throwing their food waste or their, you know, packaging or whatever out there. And some people just throw trash. That's just the way the world works. Well, in a city like Baltimore, where some people, depending, I mean, most people were perfectly fine. They cleaned their houses. Other people, less so. And it doesn't matter where you live, unless you live on stilts. If you don't clean your kitchen, if you leave food laying around your property, you're going to get rodents. Not to mention the crime problem in Baltimore. Murders have gone up significantly. In 2015, Baltimore experienced the Freddie Gray riots, right? Remember those? Baltimore saw a giant spike in murders that year, more than 300. The previous year had been right around 200. So that's a significant increase. The following year, again, up over 300. 2000, 2016 was, I believe it was 2016, maybe 2017. One of those 2 years, maybe it was 2016. Baltimore experienced, they set a new record for the most murders they've ever had. The previous record was held, I believe, by the year 1973. I don't know what was going on in 1973, but judging by the movies, the 70s were terrible for crime. Well, the difference between 1973 in Baltimore and 2017 in Baltimore is that Baltimore went from a city of about 1 million-plus people to a city of just barely more than 600,000 people. That is a massive, massive exodus. That means the murder rate, the murders per 100,000 rate, was astronomical as well. In fact, while people were paying attention to Chicago, as they should have, conservatives were commenting on another liberal bastion, Chicago, about the raw number of murders, and the raw number of murders for Chicago at this time was somewhere in the neighborhood of 500, another gigantic, unacceptable number that politicians in the Democratic Party, who controlled that city for generations, ignored completely. Baltimore was out murdering Chicago because Baltimore is about 600,000 people and the greater Chicago area is 3 to 4 million, if memory serves. So in raw numbers, yes, Chicago had more murders, but per 100,000, Baltimore had an incredible spike in murders, incredibly higher murder rate than Chicago did. Still, this was largely ignored by our friends in the media. Why? Because their friends in the Democratic Party had controlled the city for generations. Generations. Since the 1950s, there hasn't been a Republican holding elective office in Baltimore, I believe. Certainly not mayor. So when you hear all this talk and all this pearl clutching and all this outrage over what Donald Trump tweeted about Baltimore, I just wanted to give you a little bit of the data and a little bit of a peek into the fact that I have firsthand knowledge here. Now, I moved out of Baltimore when I was getting married. I got married in 2015, but I moved out in 2014 because we found a place to live that my then fiance wanted to move to, that was nice, that we could afford, and was closer to her work, and she goes to work really early in the morning, and also from Florida, can't drive if there's a light dusting of snow, so it just made more sense. Even though it cost me a ton more money, she was saving money. So that's where we are. That's the setup to this, just so you know what's going on, the Trump tweets. This story was causing pearl clutching a little bit, and then they got their hero, their savior. A CNN anchor was so very, very upset over the tweets. It got very personal for him. See, he grew up in Baltimore. His name is Victor Blackwell, and I don't know what he does. He seems to host kind of a random fill-in anchor job. Not really sure. He's listed as a CNN correspondent and co-host of New Day Weekend. So, you know, he's not really the CNN star. And this was going to be his star turn. Oh, man, it's a little bit long. A couple minutes, not 3 minutes. So, but I want to play it to you in its entirety. And you're going to hear a pause in the middle where he tries to choke back tears. He's very, very upset. There was a time when being a straight news anchor that this would get you fired. Not the choking up and the tears, although that would get you fired too, but getting to that point, giving your commentary would get you fired because your personal opinions, quite frankly, as a news anchor, don't matter. They don't matter at all. That's not your job. It's the opposite of your job. But see, Victor Blackwell is so very upset over Donald Trump's tweets, which are now at this point being called universally racist because he was talking about the district of a member of color. And Victor Blackwell hatched himself a little conspiracy that Donald Trump uses a specific word only when talking about people of color. It's so freaking stupid. The word is infested. He spends an inordinate amount of time explaining why infested in Donald Trump's tweet was so racist. Because nobody ever says crime infested, drug infested, rat infested, rodent infested, roach infested. Nobody ever said those words before Donald Trump. And now it's all racist. And the only reason Donald Trump is saying it is racist. It's so freaking stupid. Well, I lived in Elijah Cummings' district for 13 years. It was crime infested. I was asked many, many times on the way to 7-Eleven whether or not I had any heroin to sell. That seems infested to me. Underneath the elevated I-83 freeway, which goes right to downtown, under which on Sundays there's a farmer's market in the summer, there was a big chunk of it that was a tent city. It was infested with homeless people. It's not a racial term, you freaking moron. But Victor Blackwell became a star on Saturday because he was so very upset. His pearls were clutched. He was whining and crying because Donald Trump was saying mean and racist things about where he grew up. Listen to it for yourself.
This morning, the president attacked another member of Congress on Twitter. This time, it's House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings. He wrote this. Cummings' district is a disgusting, rat and rodent infested mess. If he spent more time in Baltimore, maybe he could help clean up this very dangerous and filthy place. No human being would want to live there. Infested. That's usually reserved for references to rodents and insects, but we've seen the president invoke infestation to criticize lawmakers before. You see a pattern here? Just 2 weeks ago, President Trump attacked four minority congresswomen. Why don't they go back to the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Reminder, three of them were born here. All of them are American. Infested, he says. A week before his inauguration, January 2017, Congressman John Lewis should spend more time on fixing and helping his district, which is in horrible shape and falling apart, not to mention crime-infested. Donald Trump has tweeted more than 43,000 times. He's insulted thousands of people, many different types of people. But when he tweets about infestation, it's about black and brown people. September 2014, at the height of an urgent health emergency, why are we sending thousands of ill-trained soldiers into Ebola-infested areas of Africa? Bring the plague to the U.S.? Obama is so stupid. Infested, he says. There's a revolution going on in California. So many sanctuary areas want out of this ridiculous crime-infested and breeding concept. Infested, he says. The president says about Congressman Cummings' district. That no human would want to live there. You know who did, Mr. President? I did. From the day I was brought home from the hospital to the day I left for college. And a lot of people I care about still do. There are challenges, no doubt. But people are proud of their community. I don't want to sound self-righteous, but people get up and go to work there. They care for their families there. They love their children who pledge allegiance to the flag, just like people who live in districts of congressmen who support you, sir. They are Americans, too. We'll be right back.
They are Americans too, sir. Okay. So I thought, Victor Blackwell, wow, he's very, very upset. He must have grown up in West Baltimore. What's going on there? Well, I don't know this for sure. It's according to Wikipedia, but says, yeah, he was born in Baltimore back in 1981. But, let's see. Blackwell was class president of his high school graduating class at Milford Mill Academy. And I thought, huh, I was wondering what neighborhood in the city of Baltimore Milford Mill was. So I clicked on Milford Mill Academy, and then I went to their website. And it turns out that Milford Mill Academy is in a city called Milford Mill, which, for those of you playing the home game, is not the city of Baltimore. So when President Trump is talking about Elijah Cummings' district in Baltimore, he's talking about West Baltimore, which is an absolute bombed out mess. Elijah, that's where the Freddie Gray riots were. That was where the CVS was. That was famously burned down on televisions across the country. How quickly people forget about that. Well, Milford Mill is a city on the outside of the Baltimore Beltway, on the western side of Baltimore City. It is not the city. Now, I don't know where Victor Blackwell actually grew up. He might have just gone to high school there. But it's Baltimore County out there, not Baltimore City out there. And I do know that there was a lot of problems with people who were living in the city trying to send their kids, getting fake addresses to send their kids to the county. I'm not accusing the Blackwell family of doing that. I think they probably lived out in Milford Mill and sent their kid to Milford Mill Academy. So while he's talking about Elijah Cummings' whole district, it's pretty clear to me that Donald Trump is talking about West Baltimore in his tweet. And since Victor Blackwell didn't live in West Baltimore, didn't live in Elijah Cummings' district, and I did, I think I have a little bit more authority on the subject. And oh, maybe Victor was a tourist, and I bet when he was a kid there, he certainly went into the city and had friends there and did all of those things that people do. But when you say you in Baltimore, when you say you went to, you lived in Baltimore, you grew up in Baltimore, that doesn't mean Baltimore City all the time. It means like any city. You grew up in Los Angeles. Well, did you grow up in Los Angeles or did you grow up in a city that nobody's ever heard of near Los Angeles? 9 times out of 10, that's really what's going on. Same with Detroit. I grew up in Detroit. Well, did you grow up in Detroit or did you grow on the outskirts? It's just easier to say that. Well, that being said, Victor Blackwell was still very, very upset, saying, oh, do you think these human beings, he's talking about human beings, so the people who live in the district are in, they're not human beings. He's, oh, saying infested. That's racist because he says it about people of color. It's terrible. Well, let's get in the Wayback Machine, shall we? Just for fun. Just for the hell of it. See if you can remember any pearl clutching whatsoever from Democrats, from anybody on CNN, from liberals in general, about a president who talked about crime-infested neighborhoods. I can't remember this president's name. The audio is of poor quality. It's picked up by an ambient mic. But it's the date is May 4th, 2015. That's so long ago, I can't even remember who was president then. It's, oh yes, I see here, it's Barack Obama. And this is from the official White House archives of the Obama administration. The president gave these remarks at Lehman College in New York City. And he talks about, he uses the word infested. He must be speaking in secret racist code to all his Klan supporters, I'd imagine.
Part of what we want to do was to make sure we heard directly from them, who oftentimes are growing up in really tough situations, single-parent households, low-income communities, crime investment areas.
Now, Barack Obama in 2015 was speaking to my brother's keeper. He was at a round table. An event that is that's a race-based group, and Donald Trump was speaking, or Barack Obama was speaking of children of color. One must assume that Barack Obama is a horrible racist, and Victor Blackwell will start crying at any moment upon learning of the racism in the White House long before Donald Trump, right? No, of course not, because saying something is crime-infested, rodent-infested, whatever, drug-infested, is an accurate description, sadly, of many areas. The place where I lived in Baltimore was not the worst part of West Baltimore, was not the worst part of Cummings District whatsoever, but it certainly was infested with its own problems. I had the basement apartment, so my door was on the side street. It was a private entrance. I had my own entrance because it was basically the service area of the house that somebody put up some concrete walls and made an apartment. But right next to my door was the entrance to the actual service area of the house. And it was a walled off area. That was where like the oil tank or whatever for the boilers were. Got to run out of heat constantly. The boiler was so bad. It was either blasting heat in the winter or it was out of oil. God, that sucked. I'd wake up in the morning and all the cats were sleeping on me. Like, not just on the bed, but literally on me, sucking up my body heat. And I knew, the heat must be out. But I could hear, it was a couple of times, I could hear people moving in the service area of the house. Now, you know, somebody moving in the service area of the house on a afternoon is not all that uncommon. There's paint stored down there, ladders. If you were working on the boilers, there were two of them. They were down there. There were lots of reasons for somebody to be in there. Not so much at, 11 o'clock at night. And I would hear that. They'd try to be quiet. But there were junkies going in there and shooting up. Called the landlord. We got the police the next day. They couldn't get into my apartment because there literally was a thick concrete wall there, but it was just creepy. And the landlord lived in Florida, so it wasn't like he could do anything immediately. We went down there. We saw all kinds of... It was set up for somebody to live there and do their drugs there and God knows what else there. They cleaned that out and replaced the locks. Eventually, somebody got back in because everything was kind of dilapidated in the house. Not falling down or anything, but the door hadn't been replaced probably since the 20s. So we had to go through that all over again. We were actually kind of lucky because it turns out that there was a massive gas leak down there from the street, and they had to tear up a whole bunch of the street. You could have... God knows what they're cooking up with lighters, but an open flame and a gas leak is not a particularly good thing. But this is Elijah Cummings' district. You'd always see, there was a laundromat a block away, and I used to have to schlep all of my laundry, which was a pain in the ass, because, again, I didn't have a car, didn't have laundry. I'd have to schlep in a giant IKEA bag full down the street to this laundromat, and... I don't know, 40% of the time, there's one of those junkies in there doing the junkie lean where you're like, they're going to fall over, right? And they don't fall over. Somehow, while they're in the euphoric heroin high and standing on their feet, they get incredible balance. But this was not uncommon in the neighborhood. This was pretty common in the neighborhood. There was a really nice house. It's probably pretty cheap because of where it was. But across the street, and it was a gay couple lived there. They got murdered one night. I woke up, and the whole area was blocked off with police tape. Do not cross. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? And the cops came up to me and asked me if I'd heard anything at around between 2 and 3 in the morning, and I didn't. And, yeah, they seemed nice. They were hanging out. They'd hang out on their porch and talk to everybody. They'd have parties all the time. I was never invited, but they had their parties. They had really nice-looking paintings on the walls, like a four-story house. It was huge. But they got murdered. It wasn't all that uncommon in the neighborhood for hearing shootings and God knows what else going on. My windows had not just bars. They had, like, grating on them. So they didn't want you to be able to throw a rock through it. It was great for security. It was hell if this really, really old building with faulty wiring ever caught on fire and my apartment was all wood paneling. So it could have. I remember, apropos of nothing, speaking of infestations, Victor Blackwell, are you listening? One time I'm sitting at home and all of a sudden I see something flying, like a bug just got in. I'm like, what the hell? And the cats are kind of going crazy over this. And I sound like, they're chasing this one thing, this moth or whatever it is. No, it turns out it was a termite infestation. And up through there was a wood parquet floor. I assume underneath it was concrete. I never looked under it. But the wood paneling in the walls, they had slats in between them. And all of these freaking termites were coming up and flying out everywhere. I'm like, what the hell? I grabbed a vacuum hose attachment and I'm turning the vacuum on and I'm vacuuming them up out of the air. Termites are legion, but they're also stupid. And they're all trying to get through and I'm vacuuming them up. And I finally grabbed some packing tape. It was just, I don't know if it was real packing tape. It was just clear plastic tape, wide. And I started taping up the slats, the gaps in the slats where they were coming out. It was probably about a 5 or 6 foot stretch of wall that I taped up everything from floor to ceiling, all of these slats and little cracks and knots and everything. They were coming out of everywhere. It was just their time to go forth and prosper. The whole wall looked absolutely disgusting and disturbing. And so we got the landlord out there. That happened one more time that time. And they got I did some quick research on the internet and found out whatever the latest, greatest termite killer thing was. And we had somebody out there drilling holes in the floor and putting this stuff down to kill the termites. But I'll never forget that. It's like, what? It was like a swarm. Just suddenly the first person said, let's go. And they all, or the first termite said, let's go. And they all just went piling out. And those little bastards are determined. Pushing their way through the tape, it would rip their wings off. They didn't care. They just had to keep going. So I had to keep the cats away from it, and I had to vacuum them all up. And then, after like an hour or so each time, they were done. It's like everybody's jumping out of an airplane. It's like the D-Day invasion. And then when the planes are empty, that was it. And I had all this tape that I wasn't going to take down because I didn't know much about termites. And all these dead termites just kind of stuck there to my wall that was completely covered in tape. God, I don't really miss that place at all. Anyway, you hear Victor Blackwell and you think, well, that's CNN. Well, the collective mind of the media, it never stops anywhere. The leftist Joe Lockhart, who was Clinton's spokesman and went to work for the NFL, and he's now a CNN contributor, declared every Trump supporter, if you vote for Donald Trump, you're a racist. If you support Donald Trump, you're a racist. Plain and simple. It really, literally is the Democrats' election strategy is to tell the American people, you're a racist, now vote for me. But it's not just the liberal media, the so-called conservative media as well. There is a little montage here of Chris Wallace from Fox News Sunday badgering Mick Mulvaney, the president's chief of staff, over these tweets. And he uses the Blackwell, he said, infested talking point. This must have gone out to all of them. Because they don't come up with things on their own when they all come up with something. It's a scam. But it's just a little quick montage of Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday asking about the same thing.
I mean, no human being would want to live there. Is he saying people that live in Baltimore are not human beings? Before his inauguration, the president tweeted about John Lewis, a black congressman, that he should, and this is before his inauguration, he should spend time in his crime-infested district. Then, 2 weeks ago, he goes after these four members of the squad, all women of color, and says they should go back to the crime-infested countries from which they come. Then he talks about Elijah Cummings, and he says his district is rat and rodent infested. Infested. It sounds like vermin. It sounds subhuman. And these are all six members of Congress who are people of color.
They're all people of color. Does he not think they're human? And no human would want to live there. Are the people who live there not human? No, Chris, you pompous ass. They are human beings. And they have a crime-infested neighborhood, a drug-infested city. A crime, is the word riddled better for you? Will you stop crying if he says riddled rather than infested? The reaction to this is the problem. These liberals are going, well, you can't say that. You can't say crime infested. You know what they're doing? They're claiming outrage. They're screaming racism. You know what they're not doing? Addressing the real problem and the plight of those real human beings who are stuck in these districts. The Baltimore City school system is shit. Money goes missing, millions of dollars every year. They're always short. They're always begging for money. They can't account for it. Well, gee, we don't know what happened to the money. Nobody's dealing with that. These children are trapped in Baltimore City schools with a 50% graduation rate. The literacy rate, I guarantee you, is lower than that. But you're not talking about that if you're going, oh my God, he said it's crime infested. Well, it is. It's drug infested. It is violence infested. The word is not racist, but it allows people who need the political cover to wrap themselves in this. Don't pay attention to what the criticism is. Pay attention to the words it chose to make the criticism. They don't address the actual criticism. The criticism is 100% valid. Victor Blackwell, well, my family lives in the district. Yeah, you live in the suburbs, okay? Not in West Baltimore. It's bombed out, where you can see block after block after block of boarded up row houses that junkies have clearly pushed their way into that are drug dens. What about the kids that live in that area? Victor Blackwell, Chris Wallace, do you care about them at all? Do you want to address the validity of what the president said about the state of Elijah Cummings' district? Because Elijah Cummings' district wasn't always a shithole. Like I said, I grew up in Detroit. John Conyers represented a large swath of the city of Detroit for more than, I think it was 47 years, until he was finally forced to resign because of playing office grab ass and paying people off with taxpayer money during Me Too. Democrats are still upset about that. If he weren't so old, they'd try to rehabilitate his image like they're trying to do to Al Franken. But John Conyers' district, and the whole city of Detroit, as a matter of fact, Detroit is actually doing, it's making a comeback. If you're going to buy real estate, I'd look into certain areas of Detroit. But you drive through John Conyers' district, and you drive through the city of Detroit, and you see the shell of what was. At one point in this country's history, Detroit was the richest city in the country, if not the entire world. And the beauty of what happens when a city is that rich is still visible. It collapsed because of the collapse of the auto industry, but it was at one point just incredibly booming. And you can see the, as you're driving to downtown, you see these beautiful skyline, these buildings, these Art Deco buildings, these buildings that they don't make anymore, that they couldn't make anymore. They can't afford to make them like this anymore, and they probably don't have people with the skills to make them like this anymore. Now they're just glass monstrosities that are considered green. But as you drive to the city, you see the skyline, and then you get closer, then you get into the city, and you go, holy crap, that building's abandoned. Holy crap, that building is abandoned. Holy crap, that building is abandoned. You drive through the neighborhoods, you drive through John Conyers' district, and you see houses where families used to live that are now boarded up. Moreover, you see where houses used to be, and you see block after block after block with one or two houses on them. You see corner stores that don't exist anymore, but the shells of what were there still stand, half collapsed, half burned out. All of that happened on John Conyers' watch, while John Conyers was representing this area in Congress. And you think to yourself, what in the hell? Why do people keep electing this guy? What are they getting out of it? Are they not noticing that their neighborhood is completely collapsing and you keep sending the same political leaders back to their offices? You keep reelecting Coleman A. Young, the racist, corrupt piece of crap who was literally caught involved in a scam to buy gold Krugerrands, South African gold coins, which were illegal during the apartheid sanctions. He and his one financial advisor and I think his chief of police were busted with Krugerrands. He claimed he didn't know, I don't know anything about that. He was clearly involved. The chief of police went to prison. Ken Wiener, I think, was the other guy's name. He went to prison. Somehow Coleman Young remained a deity in the city of Detroit. Buildings are still being named after him. He was that corrupt. He oversaw the collapse of a once great city. And the only reason he didn't keep getting elected is his health was failing and he decided not to run and then he died. And then they named a gigantic African-American museum after him. Like, really? This is the person you want to elevate to that? In Elijah Cummings' district, he has represented that area for 30 years. I guarantee you, I wasn't there, but I guarantee you 30 years ago, there weren't as many crack houses. There weren't as many vacant houses. Heroin wasn't a problem. The murder rate, I know for a fact, was significantly lower. It's not just Elijah Cummings. It is the city government as well, and the state government as well. It sure as hell isn't the president of the United States. The president isn't going to send the military in there. It's the local politicians. And I remember, what was it? It was 2015 or 2016. When right, it was 2016, I think, right after the riots, Freddie Gray riots. Mayor at the time was so bad, Stephanie Rawlings Blake. She was so incompetent that allegedly during the riots, we still don't know where she was. I was working in radio in Baltimore at the time. Nobody knew where she was during the riots. Couldn't find her. There were stories from trusted sources who would likely know that she'd fled to the county. Maybe she stayed at Victor Blackwell's family's house. Who knows? But she'd gotten the hell out of there because she was so feckless and confused and didn't know what to do. And I talked to the governor once when he declared a state of emergency and was sending in the National Guard. He finally, his staff was able to find her, get her on the phone, and he told her, look, I am announcing this state of emergency, and we're sending in the National Guard. You can either be a part of it and pretend that you're going along with this and you think it's a good thing, or we're doing it without you, and you can stay and be feckless. She got on board. She never fully recovered. She was terrible, and she decided that after one term, she wasn't going to seek re-election. The mayor previous to her was Sheila Dixon, who left because she was stealing gift cards, amongst other scandals, from the city. It was just such a scam. And then Catherine Pugh, who was the mayor just a little while ago, till she had to resign. So it turns out that all this graft was going on. The people with business before the city were buying a whole bunch of copies of her children's book that otherwise doesn't seem to have sold at all. Doesn't seem to have sold at all, and buying thousands and thousands of copies, lots of copies of her children's book. Why? To curry favor. It's graft. This is how corruption works nowadays. In Democrat-controlled cities, if there were any Republican-controlled cities and their corruptions, this would be how it works. This is how it works in Washington. You can't just give somebody a big sweaty envelope full of cash. You never know whether or not they're working with the feds. You don't want to risk that. You don't want to do the direct bribery. You vote this way, I'll give you this. You grant me this contract, I'll give you this. Those people get caught all the time. You find new and creative ways to do it. In Catherine Pugh's case, it appears that it was, I know you've maxed out to my campaign, and I appreciate that, but it sure would be nice if you bought 5,000 copies of my children's book. And boom, suddenly this organization that has literally no use for this children's book is buying a bunch of copies of her children's book. In Elijah Cummings' case, Elijah has always been kind of a, you know, man of modest means until his wife, his latest wife, and not his girlfriends, but his wife. He's got kids with other women. Real nice guy, pillar in the community. His wife has some consulting firm and a nonprofit. Well, the consulting firm does a lot of business with companies that Elijah Cummings' position in Congress and his seniority and his committee chairmanships, they have a lot of business before those committees. Now, you can't drive a truckload of money up to Elijah Cummings and say, here's the money, give us what you want. But what you can do is you can hire his wife for $25,000 a month. You put her on a retainer for consulting. And Elijah knows who's buttering his wife's bread. And maybe he looks at it a little more favorably. Oh, you gave a $100,000 donation to my wife's nonprofit? This woman who lives in Baltimore is suddenly getting all these contracts for companies that are interested in doing things overseas that need government approval. And boom, that's perfectly legal. And it happens all the time. It's not just Democrats in this case. This is how Washington works. You can only, you know, max out a few thousand dollars to a political campaign. You can give a few thousand more to a political action committee. You can give a few thousand more to a political party. But if you really want to have influence, you hire the spouse's consulting firm. They're always some sort of weird consulting or lobbying firm. And they get these contracts to lobby on behalf of things that prior to that they had no knowledge of, no base of knowledge for. They don't really do much. It's a no-show job. These massive corporations have these lobbying. They have their own lobbying firms or in-house lobbying. They don't need to consult with these people you never heard of. But they do it because they know that that's perfectly legal graft. It's perfectly legal bribery. And it's right out in the open. Everybody knows about it. There's a bunch of stories about Elijah Cummings' wife and how now suddenly they're very, very wealthy. But nobody's really looking into it. The way that it's portrayed is Republicans are accusing Elijah Cummings' wife of this. They're accusing Elijah Cummings' wife of that. Well, there's a little bit more to it. It's kind of like the way that they talk about Ilhan Omar's alleged marriage to her brother. It's never, you know, it's really weird that there's a lot of paperwork that suggests that she was married to her brother and she refuses to talk about it at all, ever. It's always Republicans are accusing her of these horrible things because the liberal media doesn't want to look into whether or not the accusations have any validity whatsoever. And when they do, like these St. Paul Post-Dispatch or whatever the hell it was, they find really weird stuff going on. When a few news outlets, conservative news outlets, actually looked into Elijah Cummings' wife's business, they found that it was very weird. Suddenly, she's got this foreign policy consulting business that's thriving. Why? What? What is her background? Where does it come from? I believe she was the chairwoman of the Maryland Democratic Party. It's not really, you know, an ambassadorship. It's not CIA. It's not something where you would think that that person would have some real insights and connections to really help you strategize to get whatever you need from the government of whatever. No. It looks like legal graft. It sounds like legal graft. What could it possibly be? Back to the media response and the Democratic Party response to this. And just to juxtapose it, we've already heard Barack Obama use the word infested about crime-infested areas around the country, because that's the way you describe crime-infested areas. You call them crime-infested areas. Well, we can go back to 2015, and we don't have to have a politician talking about things in general and random stuff. We can go right to Elijah Cummings' district. After the Freddie Gray riots, the senator from Vermont, his name, Bernard Sanders, decided to go up there and, God, it's such a scam, and take a tour. He was getting ready to run for president, so you can't really blame him for that. He wanted to go up there and take a tour of it because he was super progressive man. He took his cape off, but he was still super duper uber progressive man. And he was going to go out there and show them what for and listen to the people. And he was gearing up to run for president of the United States. And he said this at a press conference. These are things that were said not only in West Baltimore, but with Bernie Sanders surrounded by so-called community leaders in West Baltimore, many of whom are now outraged and calling Donald Trump a racist for using the word infested to describe this. Listen to what they sat silently for or nodded in agreement with, Bernie Sanders saying.
But anyone who took the walk that we took around this neighborhood would not think you're in a wealthy nation. You would think that you were in a third world country. But today what we're talking about is a community in which half of the people don't have jobs. We're talking about a community in which there are hundreds of buildings that are uninhabitable. We're talking about a community where kids are unable to go to schools that are decent.
Now that sounds like a horrible place. Bernie Sanders called it West Baltimore a third world country. There were no breathless monologues and virtue signaling by Victor Blackwell or anybody in the establishment left. Nancy Pelosi did not release a statement condemning Bernie Sanders for saying such horrible things. It didn't happen. That's not the way the world works. When you're a Democrat, you can say those sorts of things and nobody cares. It's all good. What's the big deal? What's the problem? I don't see what the deal is. When you're a Republican pointing out the exact same things, why, that's horrible and that's racist. So a white liberal can do those things, can say those things, but a white Republican, nope, you can't. It's racist. Actually, it is racist. It's racist to say that you can only speak to certain people based on their skin tone in a certain way. That's the real racism here. That's how sick these people are. And they're cheered by the so-called progressive media as heroes. And Donald Trump is denounced as a villain and a racist and a monster and the new Hitler. It's a load of crap. They're raging freaking hypocrites, and the real people who are getting damaged are the people who are stuck living in those areas. They can't afford to go anyplace else, and they don't have any opportunities that maybe they could work their way out of there. The people who are stuck in those school districts run by Democrats for Democrats. Nope. The progressives don't want to talk about the real issues. They just want to cry racism and shut down the conversation. That doesn't happen anymore, thank God. And thank God for outlets like this and outlets across the radio dial where people are willing to tell you these sorts of things. Anyway, that is all the time we have. You know, if we didn't tell you this, then maybe they could get away with it. They can't get away with it anymore. They've been getting away with it for so long. That's why they're so sloppy when they do it. And, of course, you got all these whiny little pseudo-conservative never-Trumpers going, you know what, this is racist, I hate it. Shut up. All right, go back and write your little website and cry to your mother. Nobody cares. You're full of crap. Your hatred has clouded your logic, however much logic you had to begin with, which wasn't much, it turns out. Anyway, enough of that. I'm getting off the high horse. You can email me at Derek@dailycaller.com. I'd appreciate it. This whole show is about Baltimore. I didn't intend for it to be, but it's something I happen to know a little bit about. I happen to live in two of the crappiest cities in the country. So, yeah, I know a thing or two about this. And it's never the it's always, you know, the liberals always pretend that the person pointing out the problem somehow created the problem, when in fact, the blood, the mud, the corruption is all on their hands. Ain't no Republican had any power in Baltimore or Detroit or Chicago since the earth cooled, for all intents and purposes. Anyway, that is, again, all the time we have. I will be back here tomorrow with more news. There's a whole lot of news we can get to. I could do 2 or 3 hours, but I'd never be able to upload it, so it would just be me yelling into a microphone. So thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Don't forget to enter to win the signed book, and we'll see you tomorrow.
But anyone who took the walk that we took around this neighborhood would not think you're in a wealthy nation. You would think that you were in a third world country.